Now stay tuned to 660 for The Author Meets the Critics.
The Author Meets the Critics. Welcome to The Author Meets the Critics, radio's matchmaker between best-selling authors and their severest critics, the nation's top book reviewers, where bouquets are tossed and insults are hurled face-to-face, man-to-man, no holds barred. And I'll meet the man who keeps the peace on these programs, your regular chairman, John K.M. McCaffrey.
Good afternoon, everyone. Our author today is Edward J. Flynn, the man who has ruled politics in the greatest Democratic county north of the Mason-Dixon line, New York's Bronx, for 25 years, and has never lost a local election there. Mr. Flynn learned the game of politics at the feet of Tammany Hall's famous Charles Murphy and went on to become an outstanding example of the modern leader of a modern political machine. Edward J. Flynn was the confidant and supporter of Mayor James J. Walker and Governor Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and he remained close to both even after Roosevelt forced Walker to resign. From 1940 to 1943, Mr. Flynn was chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He also served as President Roosevelt's trusted emissary on secret international missions. Mr. Flynn has been investigated. You'll find the story in a chapter entitled Paving Blocks and Stumbling Blocks. And Mr. Flynn has been attacked. Now Mr. Flynn is an author. And with the courage typical of the man, he is ready this afternoon to face his critics. Since Mr. Flynn's book tells us with complete candor who really wins elections, who makes and breaks political candidates, how the spoiled system works, and how political machines operate, we've invited a hard-hitting journalist who spent a lifetime watching and reporting the merry-go-round of politics, Colonel Robert S. Allen, to be one of our guests this afternoon. Colonel Allen, your recent bestseller, Our Fair City, certainly pulls no punches on the evils of the boss system. What do you think of Mr. Flynn's book?
Well, I find myself in somewhat of an embarrassing predicament here. Mr. Flynn's an old friend and one of the few men in public life that I genuinely respect. So within those rather restricting confines, I will have to make what comments I have to make. This book has been described as an honest book by authorities like Mrs. Roosevelt, Herbert Bayard Swope, Arthur Kroc, and it is an honest book. And that's the hitch. It's honest, all right, as far as it goes. You can understand Mr. Flynn's genius as a very astute and very competent political boss when you read his book. Of course, there's a very disarming innocence about it. It's honest, but it's significant for what it doesn't say a great deal more than what it does say. We get down to details after the brawl starts.
All right. I'm sure, Colonel Allen, that you'll want to cross-examine Mr. Flynn on what he hasn't said when we introduce him in a few minutes. Now, our motto on this program, we hardly need tell you, Colonel, is anything goes. But remember that there's another expert with us this afternoon, a man who knows machine politics perhaps as well as Mr. Flynn, the executive director of the Democratic National Committee, Mr. Gale Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan, I gather you liked Mr. Flynn's book.
I like the book, Mr. McCaffrey, because I like Flynn.
Huh?
In my book, F stands for Flynn and the facts, and he's dished them out in a very frank manner.
And
after all, we've got to face it, we pay a price for everything. And the price of political victory is generally a great deal of personal calumny, and Flynn has had his share of that. Now, when the smart businessman sets out to execute someone in his line of competition, he may use perhaps tactics that are even worse than the kind that Flynn used, but he is never excoriated in quite the same way. The political boss is suspected all times. If he wins, because he's crooked. If he loses, why, the reform machine beat him. But today, I think in politics, the political boss is a victim of his own success. And the fiction has grown up that the businessman is always pure and the politician is always wily. I think honor belongs equally to both.
Well, now, Mr.
So
Sullivan,
sure
I'm interested in your statement that perhaps the businessman uses methods worse than Mr. Flynn's. That's a very peculiar defense of Mr. Flynn's tactics.
Well, perhaps that wasn't it.
It depends on what businessmen you know, Colonel Allen,
well,
I presume.
Yes, but are we arguing Mr. Flynn's book or businessmen? I'm willing to argue businessmen if you want to.
Well, let's get on to the book on what it didn't say, Colonel Allen.
Do Mr. Flynn just sitting on the sidelines here?
Just for a minute.
I'd like to get down to the book. As I said, there's a very disarming and very misleading innocence about this book. Mr. Flynn is very wide-eyed and beguiling in this honesty we were talking about. And the unwary reader is apt to find himself sold a book, a bill of goods, that just ain't there, so to speak. For example, in his very skillful, argued contention that machine bosses are necessary and desirable, Mr. Flynn, very adroitly, never mentions the highly pertinent fact that the worst ruled cities in the United States today are boss-ruled cities.
There you are, Mr. Sullivan.
How about that, Gale?
You want to comment on that?
Let me add, just to finish that
both
thought.
Republicans and Democrats alike.
Yeah, well, I'm not drawing any lines. You can find ash cans in both parties. another fact that Mr. Flynn does not mention in this very adroit, and I want to tell you this is a very slick job, and I say that admiringly. I respect it as a writing man. One fact that Mr. Flynn doesn't mention is the fact that the best mayor his own hometown has ever had, Fiorello LaGuardia, the little flower, is a man who was not a machine or boss-ruled man, and who, I may say, with all due respect to Mr. Flynn fought and resisted his incumbency.
Now let me interrupt.
Just a minute. I'm afraid now that we're going to have to bring Mr. Flynn in because we can't keep him off the air any longer. Those were his tones that you heard, and instead of turning it over to Mr. Sullivan at this point, I'm going to give you our author of today, author of You're the Boss, Mr. Edward J. Flynn.
You see, I have my enthusiastic admirers with me. Or I don't know whether the National Broadcasting or this program paid for it, but I did get some applause. There's a great deal in what Bob Allen has said, and he misses the whole point of what I've been trying to show in this book. I admit that there are a great many bosses and a great many boss-ridden cities that should be corrected. Now, he talks about Mayor LaGuardia. In this book itself, I give Mayor LaGuardia credit for giving a fairly good administration in New York City. But I also say, and I say it again emphatically on the air, that Mr. LaGuardia probably built up the greatest political machine that this city has ever known. Now, of course, the danger is always, as I said the other night, that when you don't like somebody, he's a boss. And when you do like him, he's a leader. Now, insofar as LaGuardia is concerned, he built up a real political machine in this city. In view of the fact of saying that he's the best mayor that New York ever had, I wouldn't say that Mayor Gaynor, who was mayor of New York and a Democratic nominee, was a bad mayor and didn't give as good an administration as LaGuardia gave. I wouldn't say, and nobody can dispute at this present time, the present mayor of the city of New York, who is an enrolled Democrat and who is a, as you might say, if you want to use the expression, comes from the machine, he's giving a pretty good administration in New York City. Certainly, the newspapers have been saying that he's been giving a good administration. I agree with you, Bob, that there have been many machines and will always be machines that are bad ones. But I say that under the election law, the structure is there in which you can change them. Fusion will not accomplish it. Hollering about it, making long speeches, and all the things that go with it won't in any way change it. The way to change it is in the distinct political parties in this country, the Democratic and the Republican Party.
Well, now, Mr.
Clinton, clean them up, and then you clean the machines up.
Just apropos of Colonel Allen's remark about Mr. LaGuardia, I presume that he had been a specter at any Democratic feast for about 12 years, and I am going to make him a specter at this feast here today, since in the July issue of the Atlantic Monthly, he answered specifically some excerpts from your book. And one of the things that he says, and I'd like to ask you what about it, is that the way in which you keep yourself in power as the boss of Bronx County is by giving exempt jobs to all party holders, to their sons and daughters, their aunts, uncles, and their cousins, if necessary. All of these paid for by the taxpayers, not by the Democratic machine. And he also says here in his article that you're the boss not only of the Democratic machine, but of the Republican machine, and that the Republican bosslet of that county is Mr. Flynn Stooge. I'm quoting Mr. LaGuardia, that he holds a $9,000 job through the influence of Boss Flynn, that this man has a $9,000 job, and no one has been able to ascertain if he has ever in any day done a lick of work. Now, that's Mr. LaGuardia.
That's Mr. LaGuardia, and Mr. LaGuardia is running true to form. His great specialty has always been abuse and calling names. Now, talking about the aunts, uncles, and cousins and so forth, there were just as many aunts, uncles, and cousins in the Fusion organization that got exempt political jobs under LaGuardia than they do under the Democratic administration or under a Republican administration. He certainly didn't go out and pick, and anyone who has made a study of the budget in the city of New York, I haven't the time because it would take me hours to repeat name after name of a person who took part and took part very right in the forefront of things in his elections, who were rewarded with political jobs.
Mr. Allen, what about that?
Well, let's move on to another level.
A higher level,
maybe
I
that's
hope.
Been
well, I don't know. That's a
maybe
matter
that
of
level's
debate.
Been met.
I'd like to inject another personality into this tepid argument. A man by the name of Harry Truman. Mr. Flynn relates a very interesting story in his book about how Senator Harry Truman was chosen and put on a Democratic ticket as Roosevelt's 1944 running mate. I'd be the last to question Mr. Flynn's account of this affair. But Mr. Flynn writes that President Roosevelt personally decided on Truman and sent Mr. Flynn to line up the support necessary for Truman's nomination. According to Mr. Flynn, he encountered a great deal of resistance from Democratic leaders. It's all very interestingly and excitingly told by Mr. Flynn, but what Mr. Flynn doesn't tell is this. The reason these party leaders balked at his statement that he was representing President Roosevelt's viewpoint was, to put it very bluntly, these party leaders questioned Mr. Flynn's motives. Now, that's putting it a little harshly, but I don't mean it in exactly that way. And the reason why they questioned Mr. Flynn's motives was because, being practical politicians themselves, they strongly suspected that Mr. Flynn had an iron in that fire himself. And Mr. Flynn was unable to convince these Democratic leaders that Mr. Truman was President Roosevelt's choice, and he had to go to the White House to get direct word from the White House that Mr. Flynn's statement was so. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that party bosses are suspect right within their own party.
Now, Mr. Flynn, any argument in which a man is not killed is tepid.
That isn't very unusual. Because
I'm certain
that all of these holier-than-thou organizations that you claim should run things politically are equally suspect of each other. Certainly, there's no question about that. If you're going to get into an argument into the way human nature works, then we're going to take 2 hours in this argument.
I'm willing.
Well, we'll complete that afterwards. That's between you and me.
Well, Mr. Sullivan, do you feel you haven't indicated that Mr. Flynn was suspect to you? Or are you a boss, Mr. Sullivan?
No, I'm not.
Unfortunately, he is not.
Mr. Sullivan is not a boss, and so therefore Mr. Flynn is not suspect to you. Well, what about the whole issue of bossism? Mr. Flynn says that our election laws provide for parties and that bosses are therefore inevitable, I presume. Is that your point of view, Mr. Flynn?
I mean, when you make that statement as coldly and as boldly as you made it, it sounds pretty bad to the average person who doesn't understand it. I say that there are 10,000 so-called political bosses in this country. I don't care whether it's in politics or whether it's in a fraternal organization or in a labor organization, or call it what you will. There is usually one man in each one of these organizations that run it. And that's probably due to the fact that the rest of the members of the organization, and there may be thousands and even millions of them, don't take the interest in the organization that they should.
That's the whole story.
Now, that's what your problem is in labor. It's in politics. It's in every fraternal organization and any organization in this country. What I wrote this book for primarily, if I may be able to say it, was to try to bring forcibly to the attention of the people of this country that they are the bosses, that they shouldn't sit around, to use a vernacular, crabbing about what's happening. If they don't like it, let them go out to work and do something about it.
Well, now, a great many critics of your book, Mr. Flynn, have said that since you are such an efficient boss, that it is almost impossible for the people to do anything about this, since that the patronage groups have been built up so highly at the taxpayers' expense that, of course, they're going to go along with the organization.
Oh, no, that isn't so, and the people that make those statements know it isn't so, because any boss can be beaten. If I flatter myself to some extent, the reason why I've continued in the Bronx is that the people up there, if they didn't want me, they'd have kicked me out long ago. When they didn't want them in New York County, they changed them. In the 25 years that I've been in politics in New York County, they've had 8 or 10 different leaders, so-called bosses, each one of them. And each day the newspaper comes out and says a new boss. The boss isn't boss enough to maintain himself, and the reason why he can't maintain himself is because he isn't giving the people what they want.
Now, do you think that Mr. Flynn has left anything unsaid here, Colonel
Allen?
No,
I don't, and I agree with a great deal that he says. There's certainly with his statement that the reason there are machines and the reason there are vicious machines, be specific, is because the great mass of the electorate just don't do anything about it. They're too dumb and too lazy and too stupid to do anything about it.
There speaks
and
a Jeffersonian Democrat.
Miserable government, and it got misrule and corruption. They are to blame for it. It gets down in this country to one thing, and that's the guy who cast that vote.
The primary vote.
Now, let me tell you something. And that's to you people listening here in front of me and as well as on the air. Last year we had a vital election, a great congressional election, the first one after a Titanic war. How many people do you think voted? 30% of the people of the United States voted. And you got what? You got a 30% Congress. Now everybody's sitting back yapping about it. Well, what do you expect when you only elect a 30% Congress? It gets down to one thing, and that's the burden of not only Mr. Flynn's book, but an equally good book, Our Fair City, that was mentioned here. Edited by Robert S. Allen and written by 17 crack newspaper men. And the burden of that... Thank you. And the burden of that book was exactly what Mr. Flynn just said. If you don't go out and exercise your privileges as free Americans, you're going to get kicked right in the teeth, and you got it coming to you.
Furthermore,
I'm all for Mr. Flynn doing it.
Furthermore.
My only regret is that I'm not there doing it.
Well, a frank admission is good for the soul, they say. But anyway, Bob said that only 30% voted in the general election. But as I set forth in this book, and as I am trying to emphasize as often as I can wherever I go, we have a two-party system in this country. It's the best idea that's ever been invented, in my opinion. Countries like France and different other countries that have had more than a two-party system have invariably failed. Now, that 30% voted in the general election, but I'll bet if the figures were taken, not 5, and probably at the utmost 10% voted in the primary election, where the real basis of the whole situation exists. You're finally handed two people in a general election, but where the difficulty is in the primary election. And these holier-than-thou people who say, of course I wouldn't enroll, that's beneath me, I'm an independent, figure that they're accomplishing something for themselves and for their city or their state or their country, are really accomplishing nothing for them, because they should be enrolled in the two major parties and make themselves felt in those parties. Forces and political organizations don't do things that they know they can't get away with.
Mr. Allen, are you willing to let Mr. Flynn say that the history of outside movements in America has been one of futility, such as the La Follette Progressive Movement in Wisconsin?
Well, it certainly has wound up that way.
I'm talking about the time when it was flourishing. Certainly it is no longer flourishing now. But if you look at its record of social legislation, are you willing to say that as an independent party it was a failure?
No, very definitely not. But the question has arisen very ominously in my mind as to whether these types of reform that we've known in the past 50 years are worth the effort, the titanic effort and blood and struggle that are expended on them. What did the La Follette movement out in Wisconsin wind up in? It wound up in a shambles out there. That is today one of the most reactionary states in the country, dominated by a bunch of old buzzards who have wrecked whatever La Follette created and are now throwing the state into debt.
Can I interrupt for just a minute?
Mr. Flynn.
I'm very happy that you brought that up, because we have a record in the state of New York that's an entirely a different one. And it was done through the efforts of the Democratic Party and Democratic governors.
Is this a commercial?
The social? No. If it is, it's a good one.
Well, you ought to sing, yeah.
Furthermore,
happy days are
every
here,
bit
yeah.
of every bit of social legislation that this country has had originated in the state of New York.
In the state of Wisconsin.
Started to originate under Governor Alfred E. Smith.
Preceded by Governor Robert M. La Follette.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Flynn, you stepped into my home state here.
It was put on the statute books by Smith, it was put on the statute books by Lehman, and it was put on the statute books by Roosevelt.
Well, now let's...
And that was done by a Democratic party, not by any bull moose or bull anything else.
Mr. Flynn, I'd like to amend that statement. It was true. I don't want to detract from the Democratic Party. It's true that this was all these things were done under Democratic administrations. But the people that put those administrations into office were the independent voters. And that gets down to what we were talking about a minute before, and that is when the people really want to exercise their rights as citizens and want good government, they can get it. And I've come to the very serious doubt after many years of political reporting as to whether our people really want good government over a long period of time, because the record doesn't bear it out. You have a reform or enlightened a liberal administration, and it's followed by a pronounced reactionary swing. It takes you over a cycle until things get so bad that people sort of explode and have a kind of eruption, usually winding up with a bunch of incompetents in office.
Well, now, I'd like to come in here and make another quotation from the newspaper PM, from their review of this book, in which PM says one has only to recall the lukewarm party support for FDR in 1940 and 44 as against the magnificent support provided by PAC and other independent voter groups, to detect at the least an oversimplification. Now, I'd like some comment on this statement from Mr. Flynn and perhaps from Mr. Gale Sullivan, who is man of the week for PM, I believe, as of today, aren't you, Mr. Sullivan?
Well, I think, Ms. McCaffrey, that after 1936, the Democratic Party regarded Franklin D. Roosevelt as the great precinct captain, and our organization started to lay down on the job. We failed to realize that we had to put candidates in every contest in every county. We failed to realize that the basic motivation for that was fill the county courthouses if you expect to have good organizations. And we got lazy. That was one reason why we didn't bring through the good support for him that was necessary, the reason why certain independent groups had to get behind it. But I think we've learned our lesson out of this last campaign, as Bob Allen so well said. Between 1944 and 1946, there was a differential of 11 million votes, and over 6 million of those were not even registered. 9 million of those, 11 million, would have been Democrats if they voted. And they have failed to register, and they can't hope to express their opinions or give a mandate to our leadership unless they do vote.
To whom does this
failure
belong?
The people are the bosses, Mr. McCaffrey. I think that Flynn was right in that statement. The people are the bosses. I mean, the politician is the people. When he gets ahead of them, he doesn't get ahead very far, or else he loses out. If he gets behind them, he's dumped too. He's got to represent the popular will. And when they're decadent, he's bound to be decadent. When they're alive and when their political morality and ethics are right, the politician's political morality and ethics is right.
Now, Mr. Flynn, do you conceive of that as your job in the Bronx to reflect the ethics and morality of your constituents?
No question about it. I've tried as best I could. And even again, bringing Mr. LaGuardia into the picture, in that same article in the Atlantic Monthly, he said that the district attorney's office in the Bronx was the best district attorney's office he had ever known.
That's right.
He merely reflected what was said by every newspaper in New York City. And yet every one of them in the district attorney's office in the Bronx were the clubhouse loafers that he was always referring to.
Well, that's certainly when Mr. LaGuardia will compliment Mr. Flynn, that is a compliment indeed. I think that what we have given you here is a summary of a book that everyone has to read. It doesn't make any difference what your point of view is. The point is that from Mr. Allen, from Mr. Sullivan, and particularly from Mr. Flynn himself, we have a picture of a book that, for the first time, is a really candid and powerful statement of how practical politics actually work today. And I think that...
Could I interrupt you,
yes,
Mr. McCaffrey? I noticed that most of the onus seems to bear today on Democratic machines and Democratic bosses. I wonder, do we realize what happened with this Taft steamroller, this Taft machine that we had in the Congress this time?
I tell you, Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Flynn said the other night that you never mention your opponent's name.
Oh, we don't? I'm sorry about that, Mr. Flynn, but I think the people are very conscious of what that Taft machine did in the last Congress. It surely wasn't representing the people, and most of us do know that it was a favorite expression.
Well, I think, Mr. Sullivan,
of manufacturers,
that we can say that that is a highly partisan point of view, and some will agree with you, and some will disagree with you just as violently.
Well, glad he got to plug in, though.
Well, that I would say was... I'm afraid that I wasn't a sufficiently satisfactory boss of this program. And now here is Bob Sherry to give you a preview of our next book on The Author Meets the Critics.
2 weeks from today, I beg your pardon, on September 21st, The Author Meets the Critics will feature as its author of the afternoon one of the leading radio commentators in America, winner of the George Foster Peabody Award for the outstanding interpretation of the news in 1946, syndicated columnist, foreign correspondent, and author of Berlin Diary, Mr. William L. Shirer. Mr. Shirer's new book is entitled End of a Berlin Diary. Remember the date, September 21st, at this same time. Next week, The Author Meets the Critics will not be heard in order that you may hear a special broadcast by Secretary of State Marshall. And now back to Mr. McCaffrey.
Before closing, I'd like to thank Mr. Edward J. Flynn for coming here to discuss his new book, You're the Boss. We think, Mr. Flynn, you've got a bestseller. Your book certainly deserves a reading by anyone interested in politics and government, whether Democratic or Republican, even by fusionists, and whether you agree with Colonel Allen or with Mr. Sullivan. Many thanks, Bob Allen, for coming back again to The Author Meets the Critics. We anticipate a two-fisted argument later next month on your new book, Lucky Forward, The History of Patton's Third U.S. Army.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.